Well, good morning, everyone. Here at Wall Street, over there at Bright Sheen Temple, and out there in the cloud realm, wherever you all are. It's really wonderful that we have the second location so we can spread out and not be too crowded here, and that we have the technology to reach out to people who otherwise probably couldn't come, being too far away. So it's all kind of a miracle. Very different from when we started doing these Dogen study retreats. I did not consult the archives, but I'm sure it's been at least 10 years since we've been doing these. And a lot has happened in those 10 years, has it not? For those who are completely new to this, and some of you are, Dogen is the Japanese priest who, back in the early 1200s, went with his teacher to China and brought this particular form and tradition of Zen practice back to Japan, called Saodong in China and Soto in Japan. And Dogen was a prolific writer, unusual in his day. And over the centuries, his work has come to be appreciated as ranking with the great texts of the world, spiritual writing, even though it kind of, for several hundred years in Japan, became kind of a secret, hidden material that wasn't well known. So what's different about this Dogen study retreat is that we've been looking at this particular text for the whole past month. It's a long one, and so we thought we'd do a sort of month-long intensive. So back the very first night, I gave some background about Dogen's life and times, which I will not repeat today, but it's there online if you want to listen or catch up on some of the background. But I will be reviewing some things that we have talked about, because Dogen's writings definitely bear review. And for those of you who've been following along, I don't think it will be too repetitive. Because as those of you who are already acquainted know, Dogen's writings can seem impenetrable and forbidding when you first meet them. But the more you become acquainted with Dogen and his writing and his teachings, with a little help with decoding, which I hope we can offer, the language and the themes and the images start to interweave and start to kind of penetrate into our everyday practice in a way that's quite different from the kind of reading that you might do for a university course. It's more like poetry. You don't expect to understand it at first go, necessarily. And yet, it penetrates certain images, certain phrases, become very meaningful. That's how it is with Dogen. His central and, I think, radical teaching is the unity of practice, realization, and actualization. So practice being this Zazen practice that we're doing, and by extension, taking that practice into every aspect of our lives. So practice, realization is awakening to what is often called enlightenment, but maybe awakening is even a better word. And then actualization, which means the living of it. Enlightenment isn't some sort of fixed, steady state. If anyone who's ever had what felt like a really significant experience, maybe this is it, and then felt it degrade over time, realizes it's practice, awakening, and actualizing, living, that are completely interwoven. Dogen calls, you know, talks of them being a unity, non-separate. And so also Dogen's particular way of practice is that that practice extends into our everyday ordinary activities. When we're in the Zendo, it's how we ring the bell, how we walk, as well as what happens when we're sitting, cooking, cleaning, how to care for your robes if you're a priest. All these things are part of your practice. So this retreat, as I've said, is a little bit different from past years because we've already done some groundwork on this text. It's a section, and they're often called fascicles because these were written in many different times over time and then collected at the end of Dogen's life. So they're called, the fascicles are like, they're different from chapters where there's a through theme. Right, they're, each one is discrete, but also there's a lot of common themes. From Dogen's what's called his masterwork, Shobo Genzo, or The Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. And the one... Susu, could you get me the calligraphy, please? I forgot to bring it. The one we're studying is called Gyoji in Japanese. And it's often translated as continuous practice or sustained practice. And I'll show you the Chinese or Japanese characters in a moment. And there are copies out there for each of you if you would like to take one home and put it on your fridge or at your desk somewhere. This is Michael's calligraphy. Thank you. So the first character, Gyo, there it is for the Zoom folks, means action or conduct or practice, something we actually do. And G, the second one, means... In sort of contemporary Japanese, it would be to hold, but in this case, it means to uphold. You know, to uphold your practice, right? And so, hence, continuous maintaining would be another word we could use. So that that usage for a G is often used for maintaining the precepts, the precepts of right conduct and right speech. So that makes this particularly apropos because tomorrow afternoon, five of our Sangha members will be formally receiving the Bodhisattva precepts. And so this is continuous practice. Big part of continuous practice is maintaining right conduct, maintaining the precepts. That's our relationship with the world, right? That's the actualization part. So tomorrow morning, Michael is going to give a talk about the precepts as continuous practice, not so much about the text. So I'm going to have to try and cram a lot of the text in today. We might not get through everything I've planned. The other thing that's different about this compared to a regular, more intensive Zen retreat or Sesshin is that these talks are a little more informal and that we'll break into small groups after I talk and give you some focus questions to share some reflections with each other. And also it's okay to take notes, which in a formal Dharma talk, it's not. you're not supposed to engage that note-taking mind during a regular Dharma talk, but it's okay to. It's okay to make notes on your sheets that I've handed out, and we'll work more closely with the text. So what I'd like to do this morning to start is to look at Dogen's introduction. to this text, Gyoji Continuous Practice. The structure of this whole long text is that after the instruction, he presents stories of many of the ancestors, the Indian and Chinese ancestors, whose continuous practice has inspired him. And he offers commentary along the way. And we'll look at some of those examples today, but we won't be able to cover them all. So Dogen's introduction, which is your first single sheet here, will be a review for some of you. I talked about it the first couple of times we started this, but I think it bears a closer reading. So what we're going to do is first read it aloud. And what I'm going to suggest is over there at our other location, if you just turn your sound off, and you each take turns, each read a paragraph, and we'll, over here, we'll each read a paragraph, and then we'll come back together, okay? So you can turn our sound and your sound off, and yeah, okay, go for it. So not everyone will be able to have a chance to read, but let's just go around and start with Broadus if you would like. And if you don't feel like you'd like to read, just say I'll pass and the next person. Okay? First paragraph.
On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It forms the circle of the way and is never cut off. Between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there is not a moment's gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is undivided, not forced by you or others. The power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. It means your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in the 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by yourself, it is so.
Accordingly, by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized and your great road opens up. By your continuous practice, the continuous practice of all Buddhas is actualized, and the great road of all Buddhas opens up. Your continuous practice creates the circle of the way. By this practice, Buddha ancestors abide as Buddha, not abide as Buddha. Have Buddha mind and attain Buddha without cutting off.
Because of this practice, there are the sun, the moon, and stars. Because of this practice, there are the great earth and the open sky. Because of this practice, there are body, mind, and their environs. Because of this practice, there are the four great elements and the five skandhas. Continuous practice is not necessarily something people in the world love, but it should be the true place of return for everyone. Because of the continuous practice of all Buddhas of the past, present, and future, all Buddhas of the past, present, and future are actualized.
The effect of such sustained practice is sometimes not hidden. Therefore, you aspire to practice. The effect is sometimes not apparent. Therefore, you may not see, hear, or know it. Understand that although it is not revealed, it is not hidden.
As it is not divided by what is hidden, apparent, existent, or not existent, you may not notice the causal conditions that led you to be engaged in the practice that actualizes you at this very moment of unknowing. The reason you don't see it is that becoming conscious of it is not anything remarkable. Investigate in detail that it is so because the causal condition, the aspiration, is no other than continuous practice, though continuous practice is not limited by the causal condition.
Continuous practice that actualizes itself is no other than your continuous practice right now. The now of this practice is not originally possessed by the self. The now of this practice does not come and go, enter and depart. The word now does not exist before continuous practice. The moment when it is actualized is called now. This being so, your continuous practice of this day is a seed of all Buddhas and the practice of all Buddhas. All Buddhas are actualized and sustained by your continuous practice.
By not sustaining your continuous practice, you would be excluding Buddhas, not nurturing Buddhas, excluding continuous practice, not being born and dying simultaneously with all Buddhas, and not studying and practicing with all Buddhas. Blossoms opening and leaves falling now are the actualization of continuous practice. Polishing a mirror or breaking a mirror is no other than this practice.
Even if you might try to ignore it in order to hide a crooked intention and escape from it, this ignoring would also be continuous. To go off here and there looking for continuous practice appears similar to the aspiration for it. But it is like leaving behind the treasure at the home of your true parent and wandering poor in another land, wandering through wind and water at the risk of your own life. You should not discard the treasure of your own parent. While you are searching in this way, the Dharma treasure would be missed. This being so, continuous practice should not slacken even for a moment.
Thank you, readers. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's good to read aloud. We don't do that enough in our on-screen lives, right? Looks like they've finished over there too. Sorry, maybe we can get you Zoom people taking turns as well. So there's a lot in here. It already gives you a little sense of Dogen's style of writing, where he's always like turning that lens and turning it again and looking from another angle and turning things upside down and inside out on us so we don't get stuck anywhere. But there's some wonderful lines in here. But before I go through and give my, you know, august commentary, I would like to invite you, because we did talk about this the first couple nights, I'd like you all to read back through this. Don't take a lot of time. I'm only going to give you maybe 10 minutes. But take a pen and just mark anything that kind of sparks for you, that catches your attention, whether you feel you understand it or not. You might want to underline and put a star by something that where you really feel a resonance, you know, this is meaningful, or in a question mark by something that is just, I don't get this. But just mark anything that kind of stands out for you. Okay, just take about 10 minutes to do that. Okay, wherever you are. And we could pause the recording and pick it up again if we're careful. Well, thank you all again for being willing to plunge right in to Dogen. And this first introduction, there's a lot there, and it really gives you, I think, a good picture of Dogen's mind, doesn't it? And what practice means to Dogen. Let's take just a little bit to go through. So I'm going to have to decide at some point whether we do another section. But there's so many important, as I was floating around listening to the different groups, I was pleased that so many of you noted some of my favorite passages in this text. Let's just go through and see what arose for people, any questions or comments on that first paragraph. Anything anyone wants to bring up? It is where he lays out that first very important unity of aspiration, practice, enlightenment. Here he words it a little bit differently, but he's saying the same thing. Practice, realization, and actualization is another way of saying, here he's adding aspiration. You know, it's like a, the aspiration comes before the practice. But does it become, is it linear? Does it come before practice? Or does it, you know, our aspiration is continually renewed, right? It's, so there's this circle of the way. Yeah, Michael.
In the third to last sentence, the power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. What the heck is, does confirm mean?
Yeah. Oh dear, I didn't bring the Japanese with me, and I sometimes like to take a peek, and I also like to look at different translations, and I see you have the Nishijima cross there, if you can find it. Do they use the same verb? So I can't check that for you. Confirm is a curious word here.
Where is it again?
The first paragraph.
First paragraph, next to last line, beginning of the next to last line. Confirms this continuous, the power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. I'm going to guess that confirm might not be the best translation, but I need to...
I mean, this one's really different.
Yeah. Oh, you would be amazed how different the translations are.
Of this conduct and observation maintains ourselves and maintains the outside world.
So they're saying virtue rather than power, and maintains rather than confirms. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that confirm is not the word I would have chosen. I'm such a translation geek. but without checking, I can't say. But it is a sense of, you know, actualize. Because we don't exist apart from others, right? So we don't practice as an isolated entity. We only practice and live in this matrix of relationship. And so this continuous practice, power of it, virtue of it, actualizes us in that matrix of relationship, is how I would read that. It's so fun when you start reading this in different translations and then commentaries on, and even the scholars say, well, this might mean... So there's some passages in Dogen that are just too obscure, and I appreciate it when they acknowledge that. But I don't think that's the case too much here. This continuous practice is undivided. There's another fascicle in Dogen's Shobogenzo called undivided activity. And to me, that's just something that means so much. It means that this practice is absolutely all-inclusive, right? And that the divisions, the way we split, are the conditioned, you know, all the conditioning that we bring with us that says this is good and that isn't, and you're worthy and you're not, and all those ways that we split ourselves into pieces. But this practice includes all that, which is pretty liberating when you think about it, when you experience it, actually, when you experience it. So, yeah, looking at the second paragraph, anything anybody wants to comment on there? That's kind of extending the first paragraph. Oh. And I think he's continuing to describe how his vision of continuous practice is not individual, but a continuous stream of practice that is always reciprocal, always in relationship, and that comes through time, right? Flows through time from the ancestors through us to those in the future. Dogen's concept of time is quite remarkable, considering how long ago he lived before quantum physics, etc. That line, there's that curious line, Buddha after Buddha and ancestor after ancestor do I'm reading another translation. In here, this one, this translation, by the way, is the kind of most accessible, but not necessarily the most true and accurate to the original.
Whose is it?
This is Kaz Ta-Nehisi's that I gave you. So he's saying, by this practice, Buddha ancestors abide as Buddha, not abide as Buddha, have Buddha mind, and attain Buddha without cutting off. Which is, that's one of the more difficult lines in here. There's a new, very scholarly translation put out as a cooperative venture between Stanford University and the Japanese Soto Zen organization with extensive footnotes. And their translation says, Buddha after Buddha and ancestor after ancestor do Buddha abiding, do Buddha denying, do Buddha minding, and do Buddha attaining, and are not cut off.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. But the important thing about this rendering is that all of those are not cut off. Not cutting off is another way of saying continuous.
Yeah.
Don't be stuck anywhere. So there's that curious way that both manifesting as Buddha and not manifesting as Buddha are included in this list, which to me expresses that way that we as living, embodied human beings living in a world of great complexity and suffering flicker between delusion and awakening, right? In one moment we are just embroiled in our mess, and then suddenly it drops away and we're clear, right? Samsara and nirvana are just this far apart, right? It's often called a hair's breadth apart, right? And we experience that sometimes, you know, even in our zazen. Something can come up that's so intense and awful, and then where did it go? Right? It's gone.
We have a raised hand on Zoom.
Oh, good. Thank you for keeping an eye on those Zoom folks. Who would like to speak out there in the Zoom realm? Is that you, Kuya?
My hand is up. So
go for it. Yes, Kuya, please.
Kuya, I'm in Creston, British Columbia, with a small backyard temple called Sakuraji, and one of the phrases I chose came from that paragraph, and it's the phrase, the great road opens up. And I think it's pretty much what you're actually talking about, only the way I conceived of it was the reason I practice is to realize continuous practice. And that to me uses the word practice in two ways. For 30 some years, I've been off and on doing a practice of trying to notice when I'm thinking about myself. When I notice that I'm thinking, to notice if it's thinking about myself and how to get out of my suffering and what is causing my suffering. And all of that, and then I get my awareness gets locked into a very small space. My tiny puny little mind, I'm just running around inside. And then when over the years of doing that practice, I think I've been able to realize the continuous practice of the great open road, because I'm suddenly, when I'm not thinking about myself, I'm totally in touch, for example, right now with the snow that's coming down. And I'm physically limited right now because of illness. I can remember the feeling of snow falling on my face and coming into the house. And the whole thing is right there. That entire road of snow falling opens up when I'm not worried about how to finish my suffering. And that line was quite wonderful for me, that phrase. Thank you.
Thanks, Kuya. Bert, I see your little yellow hand.
he's working on his
tech. And he's now unmuting, I hope. Not unmuted yet, Bert.
The audio needs some help sometimes.
We're good, we're good.
Yeah, we're good now. So continuing on this great road, which just seems like a good place to go, what it evokes for me is the idea of the way from other Buddhist texts. And what comes to my mind is that Sing Sing Ming, the great way is not difficult for those with no preferences. So I would presume Dogen is talking about the same great way when he calls it the open road, the great road, etc. Is that
That's a fair assumption.
That's a fair assumption.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And also, Dogen will reference that poem, and that's where that phrase, also the hair's breadth's difference between samsara and nirvana, you know, can just turn. That's in that poem, the Xing Xing Ming.
Thank you.
I forget the English.
Trust
in mind. Thank you. Trust in mind is a good translation. I think you're going to see all through this how Dogen sees our delusions and when we awaken to them as kind of the pivot point of awakening, so that we don't have to despise our delusions, but recognize them with continuous practice, with kindness, with patience, and utmost clarity. Our delusions are, I like the word pivot. Dogen uses that word in another text as a sort of pivot. So you're going to see that. You're going to see that coming up. This next little section about the sun and the moon and the stars and the elements, that's Dogen uses these images from the world, the natural world, the more than human world, frequently. And, you know, he lived in a world where you walked everywhere, where you walked in the mountains. You know, he had this direct experience of the mountains and the rivers and the stones as full of dharma, full of teachings. And you often find this. And this is all part of our continuous practice. We are made up of and in relationship to all these elements. You'll see that always in Dogen. And then in ways that we'll never know, you know? I find that, and I heard a number of people comment on that, you know, not noticed. There are times that we notice the effect of our practice, and that's, we feel good about that, right? Of course, nothing wrong with that. But there's so much we don't notice and can never know about how our practice, everything we say or do or don't say or do, whether beneficial or harmful, flows out in ways that we may notice and may never know. So we have to really trust that in continuous practice. Yeah, Kate, I see you back there.
I'm curious because the sentences say, because of this practice, there are the sun, moon, and stars. Because of this practice, there are the great earth and the open sky. So I get the interconnectedness, and I get that when doing the practice, we can be aware of the interconnectedness, and we can really see and feel these things. But those two lines suggest that the world is created because, and everything in the world is created because of our practice, and that I'm a bit confused about.
Yeah, and maybe we don't need to take that as the kind of literal causation that a conventionally literal causation, and more of a, you know, co-arising.
Right.
I mean, that's another Buddhist term, not just Zen, but interdependent co-arising. And so this maybe is saying also something about, you know, consciousness, human awareness, right? We're stuck with it. we've evolved this far, and we are conscious beings with limited consciousness, with a lot that obstructs our consciousness at times. So I don't think we need to consider that he's giving us the literal power to create the world, but we are, you know, always in a kind of mutually interdependent co-arising with the world, right? And bringing consciousness to that. Okay. We are moving down more into the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th paragraph where he's talking about time and how the nature of now being utterly dynamic. You know, there's another whole very profound text of Dogen called Being Time, right? Uji, which depicts that kind of utterly dynamic, flowing quality of consciousness, of action, of practice. So here he's saying continuous practice is that intersection of time and being, you know, which is why awakening, or what we call enlightenment, cannot be static, right? It can only be lived and expressed and renewed. And then in the next paragraph, there's that beautiful blossoms opening and leaves falling are the actualization of continuous practice. So, you know, coming into existence, passing out of existence, getting what we want, not getting what we want. You know, it's all included. Polishing a mirror or breaking a mirror. Polishing a mirror meaning, you know, we're trying really hard to sit with a clear, empty mind. And there's that love, that great story of the Zen master coming along. This is ancient China, and seeing the monk sitting in zazen, and say, "Well, you know, what are you doing sitting zazen? What for? What are you expecting to accomplish? I want to become a Buddha." And so the Zen master sits down and picks up a broken roof tile off the ground and starts polishing it. And the monk says, "What are you doing? Polishing a roof tile?" And polishing a roof tile to make a mirror, right? And the monk says, "You can't make a mirror. How do you expect to make a mirror out of a roof tile?" And the Zen master says, "How do you expect to make a Buddha sitting zazen?" So that's the polishing mirror story. And of course, breaking a mirror is that, you know, dropping away of all self-clinging. Over there at Brightstream Temple, anybody have something they'd like to add, something that really struck them? Could be anywhere in this, just don't want to leave you all out.
Speaking of old stories, in the last paragraph, there's a reference to go off here and there looking for continuous practice is like leaving the treasure at the home of your true parent and wandering poor in another land. So that reminds me of the story from the Lotus Sutra where the son comes back home, doesn't realize that the place where he's been hired to be a stableman is actually his father's palace. And you know, he's just in the mind of a poor person. So he's stuck in his own delusion of what he thinks he is and what his practice is. And maybe sometimes we are fooled by our own concepts of what our limitations are, like, oh, I can't understand yoga, I'm not smart enough, you know? And so we limit ourselves in our practice. So that's my thought.
Thank you, Susan, for bringing our attention to that reference. For those who don't know that story, you know, it's a kind of like a Buddhist prodigal son story, where the son wanders off and squanders his inheritance and fortune and comes back. You know, he's living on the streets, comes back and doesn't even recognize his father and the place. And as Susan said, he's put to work in the stables and eventually gains confidence and strength, and the father reveals his identity, and the father reveals that he had sewn a precious jewel in the hem of the son's cloak that was there all along, right? So, you know, when we're out there thrashing around in the world, making all our big mistakes, it's there all along, right? Our birthright is awakening. Maybe that's a good place to stop for now. Where are we in our schedule, please?
So we're at 11:35, and we were going to have Kenyon at 11:20.
Okay. So we'll save the stories for this afternoon. So that'll be the other reading. You can just tuck these under your seats. And we'll